Blog Talk Radio.
Sweetheart, we are alone, and you are mine. Let's make this night a night you remember. Don't make our love a cold dying ember. The dawn, you'll be gone. All right, welcome to the St. Louis Red Army Podcast. Ole's at the wheel tonight, guys. And hello, I'm your host, Red Oldham, back from a two-week sabbatical with all the crew tonight. We are so excited to talk about Manchester United this week. All right, man. You know, PK's been out on assignment. Ryan Cass out. He's been holding the fort down, man. Hutchinson's been holding the fort down. Guys, man, we're really excited. By the way, I do want to let you guys know as a program note, at the end of the season, we are going to have a special. We're going to have a live special at one of the establishments in St. Louis where we bring in people from West Ham and Tottenham and different clubs so we can talk, do like an end of the season recap. Really excited about that. And so we'll definitely give you some more times on that as things go on. As you guys know, last Sunday, I was in Everton. I am the good luck charm. Thank you very much. It's 4-0. I will tell you, guys, I'm going to tell you what, the opportunity to chant and cheer with a United crew down 4-0 and seeing the fortitude and the passion that Manchester United supporters have. In fact, at one point, PK, they chanted your favorite cheer, up 4-0, and we still can't hear you. And it was just phenomenal. And they did that to the entire 35,000 fans that were there supporting Everton. And it was just a special, special time. So anyway, I just wanted to throw that in there. Guys, I know you guys had a chance to watch it yet. The Class of 99 special on NBCSN. What a sight to behold. Ryan, what did you think about that?
Yeah, just unbelievable. I mean, just great production from NBC Sports, you know, besides some of the commentary during United games these days. But, I mean, what can you just say about a team like that? It was just absolute class. I mean, I'm going to forget some names, but, of course, the great Peter Schmeichel and Gold Beckham, the Neville brothers, Solskjaer getting those late goals, Keane, Giggs, goals. The one thing we always have to point out is the York and Cole partnership that was going on all year.
Oh, my
fantastic.
God. They changed soccer.
Yeah, just that I'm forgetting guys. That, yeah, just unbelievable.
PK, why do you say they changed soccer?
PK,
why do you say they changed
soccer? The partnership between Dwight York and Andy Cole, the patterns they used to run on top, that was a 4-4-2, and they just – that was how you play two forwards. They wrote the book on it, and it was just stupid to watch. I remember playing for Tommy Howe back in that day, and Tommy Howe was one of the best coaches in the United States. And just his patterns were, here's what Dwight York and Andy Cole did this week. Like, that's how our forwards learned how to attack. That team of 99 was so special. Just for soccer in general, that I don't think enough people really, even if you hate United, you have to watch those guys. It was incredible.
Matt, what are your thoughts on the Class of 99?
Yeah, I haven't had a chance to watch the special yet. I'm looking forward to watching it. But that was the epitome of just United football. I mean, there was everything that we talk about in terms of what makes the club so special. We had youth that was brought up through and that was really the climax for that group was what they were able to pull off with the treble. And then, you know, Fergie was able to fill in some pieces around it with some stars from other clubs. And then, you know, obviously the legend of Ferguson and the fact that we scored that goal and that dying minutes of the game to win it in Barcelona. It was a magical time. It's a big reason why a lot of us are United fans, and it's that lore that was built up. So we should continue to celebrate it, but have the hope that one day we'll be able to return to something similar to that, and you know, hopefully Ollie can be the beginning of something special with the team going forward as the manager. And, you know, in some ways I'm looking forward to the season getting over with so we can kind of hit the reset button and see if we can start building a new dynasty.
And it's the youth Neville Neville. You'll never win the treble, and you know. Whoa. It's the youth Neville Neville. You'll never win the treble, and you know. Whoa. Jump in there, PK.
I got nothing. Sorry. No, I just want to make a, guys, I just want to make a real quick point there. When you are watching it, you do realize that the great Schmeichel, who's one of the greatest goalkeepers that has ever played the game and whoever will, he let up some pretty awful goals. He did have a really tough time there, but the difference from then until now, he had the entire team raised him up, and they raised his level, and that does definitely give the keeper some confidence there. So, you know, just wanted to put it in there. You know, this isn't like a new thing
and
with the United
I'll
keeper.
Jump on
and
that.
Real quick, just to boot, this was coming off a World Cup year as well.
And I'll jump on that too. Schmeichel did lay some eggs that year. There's some easy saves that step by, and the team picked him up. The team said, you know what, this guy's bailed us out, and then they stepped up. And it's a little difference in this, I think.
Boy, most definitely. Guys, before we get into all the United stuff, I know you've been looking at little Champions League stuff. There's this little provincial club down the road from us. It's Liverpool Football Club that were somehow made it to the semifinals against Barcelona. And Lionel Messi did his best David Beckham impersonation on a free kick, and that was just a fabulous, fabulous goal. Any chance of the Scousers coming back at a 3-0 deficit? It is at Anfield. Matt, I'm going to start with you.
There's no way they're coming back. You know, when Van Dijk is quoted after the game saying he's glad he doesn't have to face Messi, you know, every year, it just kind of sums it up. Barcelona is just a class above pretty much everybody in the English Premier League. They probably could take care of City as well at this point. So I think they're hitting a good stride, and it's just, I think it's far, far too big of a deficit, even though Liverpool's going to be heading back home. I think that the tournament itself setting itself up right now for Barcelona to win the whole thing. So, nope, no way Liverpool's coming back from this.
Ryan, if Barcelona were in the English Premier League, do you think that they would be top of the table right now?
I mean, they'd be pretty close, but, you know, let's just remember this isn't the best Barcelona team we've ever seen. They're aging, and we almost exposed, you know, a couple of holes in their defense, but there was kind of some questionable tactics from Klopp going in. Didn't start Firmino. They just wanted to play rock and roll football there in Barcelona, and that always doesn't work. I mean, I hate even saying good things about Liverpool, but they have the defense, they have the solid midfield, and they have the speed up front to play counter-attacking football with the best of anybody, you know, that we've seen in a long time. But if you were just listening to Klopp's words at the end, you'd have thought they won the match. He was very pleased with their performance, which that may or may not be true, you know, to anybody else's eyes, but they lost 3-0. There's just absolutely no chance of coming back. And as far as Barcelona goes, they could be up there.
PK, at the end of the day, when you have a Messi, a Ronaldo, dare I say an Ibrahimovic, when you have those world-class players that are just a step above everybody else, they just take the team and they just grab them by the boots and say, we're going to win no matter what. Messi's just that kind of player, isn't he?
He truly is. I mean, we're living in a blessed generation of soccer to watch him, Ronaldo, Ibrahimovic, Neymar, when he's not diving. I mean, there's so many good players right now, and I think the world is going to get better at soccer. You see the U.S. jumping up. The rest of the world is. I think we live in a blessed time. I think it's some of it with social media, with YouTube. You can watch. You know, youth players can now watch, you know, how do I do this move? And they can watch Messi do what he did 100 times and learn that move. I think social media and all that has led into that, where it's a better space to create better players. But, man, watching Messi and Ronaldo go back and forth, I mean, as a soccer fan since I was 11 or 12, it's incredible. It's so great. And, you know, every team wants a Messi. Every team needs a Messi. It's awesome.
You know, the bottom line is, though, they're just not out there growing on trees. Who will be the next Messi? Who will be the next Ronaldo? who will be the next Zlatan.
I would say there's at 10 years old, we probably have a couple Messis, Ronaldos.
I think you're probably right. Matt, Ajax is cool. They're just fun to watch. And I really thought Tottenham was going to take it to Ajax. Ajax playing with so much composure right now. Tottenham has to go back to Holland now and play Ajax. Do you think Tottenham has enough without Harry Kane to overtake Ajax in the second leg?
Yeah, I think Tottenham's got a shot. I mean, there's still a lot of class on the team. You got Son, who can certainly go out and score a bunch of goals for you. And in some ways, some people have said that he actually looks a little bit better with Kane not in there, that Kane kind of slows him down a bit. So I think they certainly have a shot. But, you know, Ajax is playing as a complete team right now, you know, and kind of remind me of one of those teams that, you know, you get to the NCAA tournament and these big schools with all the one and dones, they sometimes crash out early because they don't know how to play as a complete team. They're too reliant on their big stars. And Ajax has just built themselves up as a really good, you know, complete team. And it's shown, especially on the road, like what they've done on the road in this tournament has been absolutely ridiculous. So it's been a lot of fun to see them come through and play Cinderella and knock out some of the big boys. And, you know, Tottenham certainly got a shot, but if I had to lay my bet down, I think Ajax is going to knock them off. And I think they're going to go to the final.
All right, man. So Ryan, so what do you think? Who's going to come out of that group? You think it's Tottenham or Ajax?
Watching the game and just watching some previous games, I don't think they played all that well. They didn't play to their potential. So, I mean, they are an absolute machine. You know, it's not like driving a Ferrari, definitely. No, not necessarily, but they're definitely a high-powered machine, and they're young. They play attractive football. But going back home with a goal in their pocket away, they're definitely coming out. And, of course, Barcelona will come out too. So it should be a cool final.
Most definitely. And, PK, so moving on there, we got Europa going on. It looks like it's going to be – I don't know if it's going to be a top four battle or just it looks like an all-prem battle between Arsenal and Chelsea. But it looks like two old men wheezing across the finish line now. Both teams not looking very strong.
I would like to say, first, I would like Ajax to win the Champions League. Two, who cares about Europa? It's Arsenal. It's Chelsea. Who cares? At this point, it's all it's shown is the depth of the EPL. I mean, every other league in Europe has two or three teams. You know, we're talking top seven in our league right now. And there's a couple teams that are getting bought to be, you know, top eight, nine, ten. You know, you want to find the best league in the world, the deepest league is EPL. And that's all the Europa says to it, is you got two teams in the final four, three teams in the final four for Champions League. You've got Chelsea and Arsenal going for Europa. It just shows how deep of a league that EPL is, that every game is that much important. So I don't care who wins Europa. I hate Chelsea. I hate Arsenal. So, meh.
Hey, guys, you know, it's funny. Ajax, in many ways, is kind of the Southampton of the mainland Europe there. If you look at the players that they've sold in the last 10 years, it's just amazing. Go ahead, PK.
I would say they're the Leicester. They're this year's Leicester. They're great. I love them. I want them to win. I play for Terry Mickler, who is big into Holland football, and that's
big
Ajax.
Name dropping
and I
tonight.
Want them to do well. Yeah,
name
that's
dropping.
What I do.
That's right. Well, check this out. Christian Eriksen is an Ajax player. Toby Alderweireld, an Ajax player. As is Jan Vertonghen, too. He's an Ajax player. I mean, you got some players up front here, guys. Check this out. Luis Suarez, an Ajax player. Man, Zlatan Ibrahimovic, an Ajax player.
Ajax.
Yes. So there you go, man. Think about Ajax. If they could have kept those players, they would have been an unstoppable machine right now. So, kind of an interesting thing to look at when you have a chance to look at that. But enough of all this. Let's get to Manchester United. Now, I want to roll here because I really think that we still have a shot at top four. The schedule is really set up for us. But before we get to that, all right, Ryan, starting with you. Director of football, it looks like we're getting real serious about it and some names are being bantered around. What do you think of the three names that you see right now that are being bandied around to take over that director of football role?
I guess the newest one's Rio Ferdinand. I guess he wouldn't be too bad. I'm just not sure how good his brain is for development and everything else like that. Remind me of the other two guys that are going on now.
So we've got Edwin Van de Sar and Mike Phelan.
Okay, Mike Phelan, he seems like a newcomer too. I think Phelan would be great. I mean, he definitely has an eye for talent, an eye for development. Tactically, he's real sound, so I'd still love to see him going around there with Ole, but I don't really think it matters, just so we get that position in there and just so that we can get a direction going, because that's definitely going to be one of the most important things to get us not only challenging just for top four, which is all we're going to be doing next year, but actually getting after titles here, hopefully in the next 2-3 years.
Matt, you know, so when you look at it here, you know, we have the directors of football we're looking at here. We definitely need to get a vision, because when you look at a recap of all United signings since Sir Alex Ferguson left, it is an amazing, just a truly amazing look at stat about hits or misses in with these signings. And so when you look at them, look how much money we've spent and what we have to show for it. Go ahead and kind of look at a couple of those signings, Matt, and kind of give us an idea of your thoughts on what you see with Manchester United and the signings that we've had since Sir Alex Ferguson.
Yeah, I think the pattern has been we've made some panic buys, and we've made some buys on some guys that you hope that you can invest in the future and that they'll come good, but they're not the finished goods. And unfortunately, I think they were brought in here during a time when, you know, they needed a little bit of development, a little bit more class around them to really come good. So, you know, when I'm talking about panic buys, I'm thinking Juan Mata, I'm thinking Alexis Sanchez, I'm thinking Marouane Fellaini, and these were guys that they were available at the time. We got them near the deadline, and it was just like, all right, let's get a name in here. It's going to shake some things up and get people excited. But at the end of the day, it wasn't good enough, and it didn't seem to really fit a plan. And then the guys that I'm talking about in terms of, you know, they're not the finished goods, but there's potential. You got the guys like Pereira, and you got Fred, and the likes of those guys, where I think when you see them in and of themselves, I think there's a lot of potential there, a lot of upside. But they certainly aren't going to be able to come through and shine on their own. They need somebody around them to push them through. So we haven't been able to go out and buy the absolute finished goods, where a lot of the other big clubs have been able to do that, and then those guys can step right in. You know, you look at City, I think City was potentially heading for a bit of a decline there. I think we were talking about them aging and concerned about where they're going to go. And then they bring in De Bruyne, and look what he's done to that midfield. He's completely re-energized it, and everything flows through him. And he stepped right into that role and hit the ground running. We haven't signed a De Bruyne. We haven't been able to go out and find that type of guy that can come in and just elevate everybody else. You know, it should be Pogba, and I'm sure we're going to talk a little bit more about Pogba later. We've talked a lot about him in the past couple of weeks, but I'm even starting to sour on Pogba. And I've been, of the five of us, you know, or the four of us, I've been his biggest champion, and I'm starting to get pretty upset, frustrated with him. So we just haven't found the right guy with the right mentality that's finished good to come in and just elevate everybody else. And so it's been all these other buys that just don't make sense.
PK, when you look at some of these big money signings, I'm going to give you a couple names here, and I want you to give me your thoughts on not only we signed them, but why they didn't work out. Okay, so I'm not going to do all of them. I'm just going to do about two or three of them with you. Angel Di Maria, $60 million, coming from Real Madrid. We thought this guy was going to be the man, and we sold him in a season. How come?
He was too soft for the Premier League. He went to PSG, where he had to play about four games a year. I've said this since we signed him, and about halfway through that season, the Premier League's a physical league. You look at his physical build, he's soft. He's absolutely soft. So he's not a Premier League player. I'm glad we sold him. Good riddance.
Memphis Depay having a great success at Lyon, but at $25 million, we thought he was going to come to United, took the number 7 jersey, and was a total bust. Why didn't he work out?
I think he was a little too young when he brought him in and gave him number 7. I think he'd be a great addition now. I think he's matured. Again, I still question whether he's a Premier League player. You have to play game in, game out. But you know what? I wouldn't mind him back in the club.
Okay. Last guy I want to ask you about, Henry Mkhitaryan. Mkhitaryan was a phenomenal player for Borussia Dortmund. Came over here, really an inconsistent player, and then turns around and is an inconsistent player for Arsenal, who will probably be sold. What's the story on him?
I think he's a talented player, but again, the physical and mental toughness that it takes to play in the EPL. I don't think enough people appreciate how deep this league is, that you have to be full on every game. I mean, you go to Dortmund, you go to Germany, there's probably five teams that are competitive in that, and the rest you can walk through. The EPL, I mean, 1 through 16, you're going through a battle, and I don't think people appreciate that enough.
You definitely saw that last week when Manchester United played, or Manchester City played Burnley, and Burnley gave them all they wanted. And Burnley's just one of those sides that's set up that way. Brighton is set up that way. A lot of clubs are set up that way. So very, very difficult to play in the EPL. Ryan, I don't want to talk about Chelsea a whole lot. Let's be quick about it here. At the end of the day, Chelsea, only one shot on target, really. A howler by David De Gea. But kind of an odd shot. But more importantly, I don't know. I just didn't feel like that once we scored our goal, we really didn't have the chances needed to get that second goal. Give me a quick recap and your thoughts on the Chelsea match.
No, you know, I'm going to talk about some good things. You know, I think everybody's kind of questioning Juan Mata and Lukaku starting when we have a, you would think, healthy and Lingard on the bench right there. But Mata played a great game. I mean, he didn't make that many mistakes. The guy really plays with heart. You know, he's a man out there. You know, he kind of reminds me of one of the guys from the class of 99. His thing, he's just a little beyond his prime, so he can only give as much as he could give. And even Lukaku, that first opportunity that we had within the first 10 minutes, where he had a fantastic first touch, I almost fainted when I saw it, and then kind of bobbled a second touch and couldn't really get a good shot off. But, yeah, both teams were really going at it. It was a very entertaining first half. But then after that, it fizzled out. I mean, it just, you can look at both the clubs, they both look exhausted. There wasn't many great runs being made at the end of the day. And yeah, De Gea, he did let up, and that was a terrible goal. And what can you say? You know, we defend the guy all the time on here. I defend the guy. But one thing I'm going to say, which I mentioned off there, you know, you're not going to win many football matches scoring one goal.
Most definitely. Matt, at the end of the day, playing Rashford and Lukaku together, I just don't think this is going to work. We keep trying it and trying it and trying it, and then we'll try to throw Martial and Lukaku together. And that doesn't work. At the end of the day, I almost feel like Lukaku would be a prime guy to sell. Do you think that would be a sound strategy moving forward, or do you think Rashford and Lukaku could coexist on the same squad?
I don't think they can coexist. I mean, you see Rashford he just looks so ineffective when he's trying to be out there on the wing, and Lukaku just, you know, slows play down, and Rashford just doesn't seem to know where to go. So, you know, Rashford does a whole lot better when there's someone alongside with him in pace, and they can take on the back line together. And so it's incompatible styles. So I think Lukaku's gone. I think Rashford's absolutely the future for the club. He's a kid that came up through the academy, super young. He's very confident. Some people are saying he's getting a little too confident, and he's been a little cocky, a little arrogant. Who knows if that's really true? You know, I think there's a lot of speculation going on. But you know, I'd put my bets behind Rashford that's the guy we got to move forward with. So, you know, Lukaku's not going to be a guy who's going to want to sit on the bench. He's not going to play that role. So I think he's a guy that you can sell. And I think you can sell and get a lot of money out of him. I think we've talked about him going off to Italy or France. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, I think those are leagues that are compatible with his style of play. So I think you sell him and cash in now.
PK, that brings us to Paul Pogba, who's always the lightning rod for the team. At the end of the day, Paul Pogba is the leader of this team. Sir Alex Ferguson, when right before he left, said, hey, Paul, you can leave on a free. That's okay. And I think maybe he saw something that maybe nobody else saw. At the end of the day, is Paul Pogba really more of a Spanish player where he has great players around him and he can kind of play around the ball? Or can he be an EPL leader on a team? So my question for you is this. In August of this year, should Paul Pogba be wearing the Manchester United crest?
I say no. I've said this since the beginning of the season. He plays great when he wants to. He's the best player in the EPL when he wants to be. You watch Everton, you watch this last weekend against Chelsea. He doesn't have the mentality to be a top-notch EPL player. He's got the skill, absolutely. And I think you look at guys like Ferguson, he recognized that. He's all about social media. He's all about his walk up to a penalty kick. There's so much more drama than what you need to be a hard-nosed midfielder. You look at Man City, you look at Liverpool, you look at their midfields, they're not coloring their hair. They're not splashing on Instagram. They're not doing any of that. They're getting the job done. Pogba is absolutely not getting the job done for Manchester United. We've sold bigger players than him. I've mentioned this in podcasts before. We sold Van Nistelrooy. We sold Beckham. We've sold Ronaldo. There's no bigger names that this club has not sold than Pogba. And if this is the way he's going to treat his responsibility to the crest, get out. Go. See ya. Go sit on the bench for Real. I'm fine. Go.
Well,
get out of here.
I think that's an interesting observation. The big thing is nobody is bigger than the club, and I think sometimes Manchester United supporters forget that. Moving on now to targets, and then I've heard all these different numbers, and of course, as you guys know, you know, trying to figure out who we're going to sign is ridiculous. Manchester United's in on virtually every player in Europe, in Asia, and South America. I mean, anytime you hear a name come up, oh yeah, Manchester United's in on them, which is ridiculous. At the end of the day, and I want everybody to give their predictions and a quick synopsis, starting with you, Ryan, how many players do Manchester United bring in for the August, starting in August for the new season? Go ahead.
Yeah, it's going to be a hell of a summer, more so than ever before. I think we get four players. I think we get two that are going to be ready to start, and then two threads, if you like. But I most definitely think after this past month, we're going to go get a world-class center back. There's no doubt about that. We need somebody to lead that line. Just think of a great center back with Lindelof. You know, that could be absolutely deadly. And then I really think we get somebody in that midfield. We need to find our Scholes, our Keane. We need to find that. I'm not even sure who the heck is even out there. But if we could find that, we can definitely get rolling again. Then just get another DeLow out there. Just get another Fred. Get another guy to get in there. But we definitely need some veterans on this team to teach these kids how to play football.
Matt, how many signings?
Yeah, I'm same thought process as Ryan. I think it's going to be three impact players, and I think it's going to be a center back. I think it's going to be a midfielder, whether it's a replacement for Pogba or an upgrade to like a Herrera. I think McTominay's already stepped into that Modric type role, so I think that's where you get the upgrade. And then I think it's going to be someone up top to help complement Martial and Rashford. So I think it's three guys, and then, you know, you're always going to bring in somebody that you hope you can bring along through later on and develop. So I think it's going to be four guys, but it is going to be a wild summer. I think the market's super pent up. I think it was slow because of the World Cup last year, and then there really wasn't a whole lot of business during the January transfer window. And you've got a team like Tottenham who's going to finish in top four, and they haven't made a transfer in a year. So they're certainly going to – I think they're going to be looking to spend some money. So I think it's going to be pretty wild. Now, are we going to be able to pull that off and get those three to four players? I don't know, but I think that's going to be the strategy.
PK, how many do we bring in?
I think it's five or six. I think there's some depth. I think there's some spots that we need to fill. I think it's a five to six number, and I think they're going to be quality players. And they're not going to be the biggest names, but I think they're going to be Manchester United players.
Well, I think that's interesting that you say that, because I think Ole is looking for a particular type of player. Guys, Bruno Fernandes, that's a guy that's coming, and I've been beating that drum now for 3 months at Sporting Lisbon. That guy is a straight player. And, boy, I think that is a top target offensive player that is a lot better player than what Lingard is. And I really think that that's the type of player Ole's going to bring in. PK, staying with you, how many do we sell?
I think Sanchez is gone. I think Papa is gone. De Gea, I'm 50-50 on. I think we can do something with him. I think he's got the yips, but I think he's also exhausted. Lukaku, I think, is gone. Selling-wise, I think we're Valencia. We might be in the 10-player mark. Darmian, Marcus Rojo. We might be in the 10-player mark of guys that are just gone because they're not playing. They haven't earned their crust yet. So I think that's where we're at right now. I think they're going to look at, they're going to sit in the locker room after the last game of the season and say, all right, who's earned their spot to be here and who hasn't? And I think that's what it's going to come down to. There's a lot of players on the team right now that have not earned it.
Matt, I want to get your thoughts on how many people we're going to sell, but I do want to tell you guys this. I just read where Pogba, he can go to Barcelona, but he's going to have to take a cut in wages. And that's why I think Pogba is going to stay. At the end of the day,
we won't
have to sell him, and he is not taking a cut in wages in any way, shape, or form. Matt, how many people are we selling?
I don't know that I don't think it's going to be as high as 10. I think it'll be quite a few guys. But, you know, you got to remember, we got to keep some squad depth, right? I mean, look at the injuries that we had to deal with coming out of the Liverpool game. So, you know, about selling all that. John is willing to stay. Why the hell would you sell him off? Because we're in that spot where there's injury. No, he's not.
We definitely need Fele. I'll tell you that. Fele, we shouldn't have sold him.
Well, exactly. No, you're absolutely right.
Well,
sell Fele.
Not go back to this.
No, sell Fele. No idea why we did it. We didn't have to sell him off. You know, you've got to keep some squad depth. So there's guys that aren't going to factor in terms of the starting 11, but you got to hang on to them. So I think 10's a bit high. I think it'll be closer to maybe half that. So, you know, we got to clean house with some guys, but you can't get rid of everybody.
Well, Ryan, I think it's about time to bring in some youth. We have Huddersfield and Cardiff coming in now. These will be our last two games. Went to Huddersfield, by the way, guys, John A. Smith Stadium. And kind of a neat little place, very cool. You can walk from the train station, and I saw Huddersfield and Watford. Very, very proud people there. They were fun to talk to, really enjoyed that. But anyway, Huddersfield and Cardiff coming up. Ryan, is this the time to unleash 17-year-old Mason Greenwood along with Angel Gomes and maybe Tabith Chong? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah. I did read about that, and as much as I would like to be the romantic and stay true to our youth historically, no, I don't think it's the time at all. We must win these two games. I think they're both going to be very close games. If we win them, they're only going to be by one goal, a max of two. Maybe feature one of them. Maybe if we're up, you know, by two goals magically against one of these squads and let those guys run rampant. But no, I mean, you know, we're talking about these players we're going to get in and everything like that and who's going to go. Well, guys, we don't make top four. I mean, I'm sorry. You know, we're not Manchester United 10 years ago. It does matter to some of these players if we're going to be in Champions League or not. So I'd love to say yes, Rhett, but I think no. But 100% next year, let them go.
PK, you play those three in the last two games?
Yeah. Got nothing to lose. Throw them out there. Let them run their spot. Let's go.
Well, especially the way Greenwood's playing right now, and Rashford's not in form, Lukaku's not in form, Lingard's not in form, Sanchez definitely not in form. I think Greenwood definitely has a shot here. What do you say, Matt? Do you think you play the youngsters? Do you start them, or do you bring them off the bench, or do you just not play them at all?
Yeah, I'll disagree with PK. I think we certainly do have something to lose. I mean, we're still fighting for top four, albeit we're going to need a lot of help. So I think you give those guys an opportunity, but I don't think they start. I think it's a game where maybe you bring them on the 60-70th minute to where, you know, if you absolutely do need a little bit of a change of pace or we're cruising pretty comfortably, you throw them in. So you definitely want to give those guys some time before the year runs out and see what they can do to set your thoughts around how they factor in next year. You know, they deserve a little bit of an audition for continuing their role with the top team, squad. So, but no, I think you got to be careful how you do it. I think it's a little risky throwing out there considering we got to still try to fight for top four.
Well, I hear what you guys are saying, but I definitely feel like that Mason Greenwood needs to be playing. You put him and Rashford up top and let them run some pace. I think those guys can really make a big, big difference. And so, PK, I just think that the youth of Manchester United would be well served. Speaking of which, Axel Tounsabi, he's playing with Aston Villa right now and playing extremely well. And it's my understanding that Ole wants to bring him back next year and give him a legitimate shot. With that being said, PK, we've had a chance to look at Pereira now. We've had a chance to look at Scott McTominay. Jesse Lingard's, of course, not getting any younger now. He had a nice burst there for a little bit. Fosu Mensah's coming back. Is it time to say, hey, guys, I know you're some youngsters and we wanted to give you a chance, but now it's time to move on? Or do you think we hold on to them as squad players?
It depends on the game, depends on the week. It's the league is so evolving and there's so many players in and out of the squad that, yeah, if the guys have earned their spot, let them play. But I can't say that from here. That's where I'm at. Let the best players
okay.
play, the healthiest players play. So.
All right. Guys, and I'll wrap up with this, Ryan. We have Alexis Sanchez, who we had such high hopes for when he came over and just hasn't played it very well. And everybody says, sell, sell, sell. At the end of the day, that guy's going to have to take a pay cut to leave. Do you really see him going to another club and Manchester United eating a sizable chunk of his salary? Or do you just think we're hoping that Ole can work some magic with him?
No. Pogba and Sanchez will not take pay cuts. Anybody who thinks they will are fools. So we're going to have to subsidize their pay wherever they go. Pogba, I don't think, is going anywhere anyhow. Sanchez, he absolutely needs to leave, and we're going to be paying some of this salary. Some team in Italy will pick him up, or Spain will pick him up, or somebody in Germany will pick him up. So it'll happen. But I was his biggest cheerleader practically throughout the whole entire season. You know, I saw those tight circles of his that he dribbles and thought there was just a little bit more in him, but he never, ever matured. And never, you know, the other thing is, too, he never really had a long run of games. You know, that was the thing as well. He's just a ton of injuries. And this was a guy who did not go and play for his club this summer in the big tournament. And he got a full preseason with us. We thought we had a fresh signing, but unfortunately, it just didn't work out.
Matt, the sky is falling. The sky is falling. STLFC is not on top of the table in the Eastern Conference in the USL. Is it time to just walk away from them now and say enough? Or do we say STLFC, this is a legitimate squad that can go deep into the playoffs? Matt, we're having some technical difficulties with you here, man. You're cutting in and out quite a bit. I think you need to walk to a different part of the house. I think you do. So I'm going to come back to you. PK, what do you think? What do you think about STLFC being second at the table right now?
They've got some good sauce going on. They're a tough team to attack against, and they finish on their chances. There's a special thing going on out there right now. You got a bunch of players playing for themselves, just like the Blues. If you're local and you're listening, go see St. Louis FC. You're going to be rewarded for it. Go join them.
Well, boy, I tell you what, New York Red Bulls too, though, guys, that team is legit. They've scored 21 goals this year. I mean, man, they are banging it in right now. STLFC only 12 goals. Matt, do you think that's going to catch up with the local 11, or do you think that they can continue just playing the way they're playing and have some success?
Yeah, I mean, they scored 3 goals against against Swill Park, so it was good to see them finally break that get over that 2-goal hump. But they were scoring a bunch of goals in the preseason. It felt like this was going to finally be a squad that was going to get some offense going, and it started off slow. So I think when you watch them, I think they do such a good job of possession. I think they are creating a lot. They're certainly getting enough shots and goals. So I think it's just, getting that a couple more finishes in before the goals start coming in. So I'm not too worried about the offense. I think if we're talking, you know, over halfway through the year and we're still scoring goals at the rate right now, I start to be concerned. But I see some promise there. And everything else besides the offense just looks really sound, like PK says. They play a really good organized style, and Pulis is certainly has the team playing in a good way. So I think they're definitely going to continue to play at a good rate and have hopes for a good run in the playoffs.
All right, Ryan. So it sounds like STLFC, there's the verdict on them. I guess it's time to go out to Soccer Park and catch a match. What do you think?
I'm actually finally going on Saturday. I cannot wait. Just the stars aligned. I've got the day off. Bringing the Cadillac out there, parking in our old spot, going to be tailgating out there. So if anybody, go ahead.
What's your license plate again?
I got lucky enough to get the old STLFC, and hopefully I'll be first in line when the new MLS comes out. But I'm really hoping, guys. I'm just praying they just keep the same name. They can change the colors, do whatever, but it'd be just great to keep the same name. No, I'm 100% looking forward to it. I hope I don't bring bad luck to the team this year, but listen, it may be a little bit cloudy, but it should be around 60, 65 degrees or so like that. Perfect football and weather, so cannot wait to get out to Fenton.
Ryan, I'm sorry, man. The new team name is going to be Real Atletico St. Louis FC
United.
Social.
Social, that's right. BK, what's the MLS update? I think the MLS has just finally said, hey, Sacramento and St. Louis, screw it. Both of you guys come in, and we'll hope for a 30th team. But, PK, what I wanted to talk to you about, I want your thoughts on that. Do you think that now it's just a foregone conclusion with the MLS franchise? But the bottom line, PK, Chicago doesn't draw. The New York franchises do not draw. Dallas doesn't draw that well. I think the MLS has some problems with the existing franchises as well. What do you think about that?
I agree, but you look at any major league in the United States that there's 5, 6, 7 teams that don't draw. I think it's a common thing amongst leagues. I think it's amplified because of soccer. Everyone's saying, well, in Europe, you know, there's 25,000 to 45,000 in the States. New York Stadium, or both of them, are in terrible positions. One's in New Jersey. One you're playing at the Yankee Stadium. Chicago, you're 2 miles, a mile and a half away from any public transit, which is what Chicago lives by. Dallas is out in Frisco, which is, you know, God forbid you go out to the county for a game. I think it's a symptom of any league that's in the United States. You look at baseball. Baseball's struggling. There's a lot of leagues that are struggling right now for ticket sales. I don't think it's anything that soccer in the United States really needs to contend with. And be a big deal about, but you know, it's something to look at. Maybe some teams need to be moved. Some new stadiums need to be built. I mean, you look at New York City FC. They were founded on building a stadium, and we're 3 or 4 years into their franchise, and there's nothing on the horizon. So, is it something to be worrisome? Absolutely not. Every league's struggling right now, baseball especially. So, you want to look at numbers and all that stuff, you go right ahead. But I think MLS is in a good position right now.
Okay. Let's end the show on this, Matt. I want to come back to you. John O'Shea, playing for Sunderland right now, announced his retirement from football. Certainly a good Manchester United lad, though.
Yeah, absolutely. He's a good servant for the club, and he played during some of you know, our best times. And I don't think anybody ever doubted the heart he had for Manchester United when he went out and played. So definitely some fond memories of him. And he always spoke well at the club even after he left. So hope he enjoys his retirement.
And those are the sounds of Manchester's own Stone Roses, letting us know that we're at the end of the show. I'm your host, Red Oldham, along with the rest of the crew, Patrick Kelly, Ryan Cassout, and Matt Hutchinson. We'll be back next Thursday at 10 p.m. with another installment of the St. Louis Red Army Podcast, where we'll break down the match at Huddersfield and all things United. Thank you for joining us, and remember,
the
or in glory, man united.